a boy, now a man. The next few years had many ups and downs. Mother would worry out loud, "Wonder what's become of Roy. It's not like him to not write or send money to us." "He liked us," Lottie said. "He sure did. He bought me that new dress," Lorraine said proudly. "Now it's too little on you, and I get to wear it," Merle stated happily, not minding at all that it was a hand-me-down. "The neighbor kitty corner from us said he'd adopt me and buy all us pretty clothes if I want," Lorraine injected. "Maybe I'll let him." "There'll be no such talk around here. We'll make do," Mother replied. Lorraine said, "I hate making do." "You do have that insurance policy he left you," Lottie said. "Come 7 years," I said, "you can cash it in if he doesn't show up." "Don't talk that way," Mother yelled. "He will come back. I know he will." One evening I came home late after working for a farmer. I saw my father's car by the side of the house. I knew he was trying to not let the neighbors know he was sneaking around our home again. I wanted to swear, but I put my game face on instead, and I noisily walked into the kitchen. All heck had broken loose before I even entered. Father had my 8-year-old brother, Freeland, behind the hot cook stove, and he was beating him, and Mother was screaming for him to stop. The girls and Clem were huddled under the table, trying not to become part of the dreadful goings-on, and in I walk. In that moment, it was as if every beating I ever had from the man we called Father welled up inside me in horrendous resentment and rage. I knew what my poor brother was feeling, wondering if he'd get burned or beat to death, just praying it would end. My fury took on a life of its own. I pulled the man I hated the most in the world off Freeland, and I told my siblings and Mother to run. "It's either me or you," I shouted at Afton. "One of us will die tonight." And I hit him full-fisted right in his eye. Shock on his face was clear. He knew I meant what I said, and he knew my wrath would not be contained. Soon we were out in the road. Neighbors surrounded us as two bull-headed Barneys were in a fight to the death. I didn't care if I killed him or ended up in prison. I wanted him out of our lives. Someone eventually got in touch with the police and a doctor. "Afton's in pretty bad shape," the doctor said. "He may have a concussion. Sure took a terrible beating." "He should be in a reformatory," my father said of me, wiping blood from his lower lip. "And let you beat up my brothers and sisters every chance you get? Sneaking around here like a thief in the night? You aren't fit to be our father. You don't even support us," I yelled. Well, I did come within an inch of going to the reformatory because of that day. I went to court. Father and son pitted against each other. An awful lot of people testified, but most of the neighbors and family stood up for me. I didn't kill my father, but I didn't go to reformatory either, and I had made it clear that Afton could no longer have his way with my family. A man on the street asked today if I wanted to join the CCCs, I said excitedly as I entered our dilapidated house. "That would be great," Mother replied. "But you're not old enough. I think you need to be 16. I said, "I told him that I'm not 16. But he said, "You look like a strong young man. I bet you could fudge a bit on your age." "That would be wonderful," Mother said. She gave me a rare but sincere hug. "It would help our family so much." "I heard they pay about $1 a day. Lottie almost whispered the large amount of money. "Oh," Lorraine assumed, "I can get a pretty dress," as she automatically popped her thumb into her mouth. "You bet, if Mother thinks we can afford one. In fact, all of you should get new clothes," I injected. "What's CCCs?" Merle questioned. "It's a great new program President Franklin D. Roosevelt is providing to pull us out of the Depression," Mother said. "It'll put a lot of men and boys to work on new parks and roads and I don't know what all else." "It's the Civil Conservation Corps," I replied. And we all began to dance around the room enthusiastically. "And I'm going there." Soon, a whole new world was opened to me in the park's camps. Those of us who joined were placed in a company street about 400 feet long, with a captain and a lieutenant on each side of the street. They trained us like we were going into combat, except we carried picks and shovels instead. In the summer, we'd work in the cooler Bryce Canyon. And then in the winter, We'd end up in southern Utah, in Zion's Canyon. "I can't believe it's supposed to be winter and must be sitting here at about 50 degrees," I said to a newfound friend.
"Kind of like the army," he replied.
"Wow, we get our own cotton army blanket," I said. "I've never had a new blanket." Tom Drake was a park ranger over Zion's Park. He was like a father to me, really liked me. One day he hollered,
"Hey, Barney, get over here. I got a question for you."
"Sure thing," I said, running as fast as I could to him and sitting down beside him.
"Barney," he said with a big grin crossing his face, "you are my new assistant. I'm placing you over the dynamite."
This word shocked me. I took a deep breath and almost tumbled off the rock I was sitting on.
"Me, sir?" I asked in astonishment. "Barney, you're well qualified, and I know I can trust you to get the jobs done. And by the way, you'll be getting a raise. As my foreman, you'll get an extra $15 a month."
Well, I was able to send the full $30 a month home to Mother and kept the $15 a month for my living expenses. I was one of the happiest crew members in that park, till my sails were knocked out from under me when a couple of the older workers approached me.
"It's too bad we have to be bossed around by a snot-nosed kid," Amos Shumway complained.
"Putting you over us older men with families," Mr. Bobby agreed. "With more pay, too."
"Well, I can make arrangements for you both to go home if you like," I replied loudly, all the time shaking in my boots but not wanting to show it. They never said a word to me after that. There were two companies of workers. I was foreman over the rock walls as you enter Zion's and turn southeast to Zion's trails. "I could live here in Zion's Canyon the rest of my life," I stated one day. A group of us were chiseling a trail of solid rock steps around and upward toward the bright blue skies.
"I don't mind it,"
Lever replied,
"except when we get a heavy thunderstorm and those muddy waters rain down on us from above."
"You got a point there. We've been through some pretty bad washouts. We're lucky none of us have been killed, I suppose."
"Appears we've gone about 1,200 feet up this ledge,"
Lever said.
"I don't want to measure it," I replied. "We'll soon be going home after long 2 years."
We were in Bryce's Canyon in the summer. We'd put erosion dams in the reservoir near Tropic and taken out beetle-infested trees, planted new ponderosa pines,
and made trails near Podunk on the west end.
Things could get scary when some of the men would come up missing. Such was the day it was reported that Burris Hatch and Browse Webster had wandered off.
"Do you know where they were last seen?" I questioned.
"Not for sure," was the reply.
"I hope they haven't wandered off a cliff," I worried out loud. "There's so many nooks and crannies in this valley. We'll have a devil of a time finding them."
"Then we better start praying," Ranger Tom Drake said. Several men agreed. With sinking hearts, we gathered into groups, each group taken off for a different direction.
"Hello! Hello, anyone there?"
I hollered. Sometimes my voice echoed off a red mountainside with jagged cliffs, like praying hands reaching for the sky.
"Hatch! Webster! You hear me?"
Hours later, we heard a faint reply further up the canyon.
"We're here! We're up here!"
Sure enough, they were stranded on a ledge, too afraid of falling to climb up or down.
I've never been so glad to see the whites of your eyes,"
Webster stammered, his voice shaky. I threw a rope up to them to tie around their waists.
"Be careful,"
I warned.
"Come down slow.
We don't know if those rocks could come down on us with you." First Webster came down, eventually planting himself on the trail in total relief. Hatch came next, slowly down the outcrop, listening to every direction I hollered up to him. When he was with us, could stand on his wobbly legs, he threw his arms around me and exclaimed,
"You are my friend for life!"
Hatch did stay really close to me after that. Funny thing, we did become best friends for life. He later married my sister, Lorene. 2 years went by in a hurry.
"I hate to leave here," Burris stated. "It's the best money I've ever earned."
I agreed.
My mother says it's saved our family's lives. From what my siblings write me, it's true.
How often at night, when the heavens are bright, with the light from the glittering stars, have I stood there amazed and asked as I gazed if their glory exceeds that of ours. Home, home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the sky